Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
Seachtain, an Indo-Askeilige.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chur, agus súligam amach an seo, gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara I gcuir na meáin an cheistin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthchar na reachtam. Iadach sé tarrin gribhan ar chur san I lis dúhal agus gimine fnacht gór a clig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhin áon tar dorach sa sin, bhin marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
As we enter into yet another school week marred by rising COVID numbers, the spotlight is firmly on the nation's younger schoolgoers, with recommendations for the wearing of masks from third class upwards until the middle of February expected tomorrow. Now, vaccines too are finally on the cards for children aged between 5 and 11 years. And this will be most welcome given that in recent days we've had stories of a new variant of COVID, but also news that booster vaccines will be rolled out to everyone here in Ireland. And as the new test and stay approach comes into effect today with antigen tests permitted in primary school settings, the Indo Daily examines these issues surrounding our school children and COVID. I'm Siobhan Maguire, and joining me today are Christine Loescher, Professor of Immunology, Sheena McGinley, Irish Independent columnist, and Rob White, Principal of Kilmeade National School in Athy, County Kildare.
We've seen from September to date is that in general schools have been what we would regard as a safe environment.
Well, schools will reopen on January the 11th, and the public health have been consistent in saying that schools are safe places for our children.
Indeed, our national experience here would reiterate the point that our schools are essentially safe places to be.
Among the safest things that we can do over the next couple of months is to reopen our schools, reopen our childcare facilities, to allow children to return to education and return to normal life.
Christine Loescher, Professor of Immunology at DCU. I want to ask you about the notion of vaccinating our children and also the idea now that's on the table for mask wearing for kids in third class and over. But can I first ask you about this new variant we've been hearing about all weekend?
Yeah, so it's just come to light that a new variant is of concern, I suppose, that's arisen in South Africa. And at the moment, it's small case numbers in a small number of countries. However, the concern is that it has a very large number of mutations. So like up till now, when we've been dealing with variants, we've been looking at having maybe two or three or four mutations in the spike protein that we make the antibody against when we get vaccinated. And so far, our vaccines have still remained very powerful against them. The issue, I suppose, with this new variant is that there's way more mutations. So they think that there might be up to 30 mutations in the spike protein, which means that we don't know yet how good our antibodies are going to be from our vaccines against this variant. So there's a lot of unknown at the moment, which I think is really the cause of concern that we just don't know yet. And I think it's going to be in the coming weeks that we're going to understand a little bit better about whether or not it's going to evade vaccines. And then it will be of significant concern.
It just feels like it's never ending. I mean, you know, we're still trying to get our heads around Delta, aren't we? And perhaps you can give me an idea, Christine, as to how Delta manifests itself in us, how it seems to spread so quickly, especially among children.
Yeah, so, I mean, Delta was a cause of concern when it arose as a variant, and that was because it was able to transmit from one person to another just way more readily. essentially the mutations that Delta has, those mutations have given it that advantage. So this is kind of a normal process that viruses undergo all the time, where as they replicate, they have mutations. If the mutations give them a good advantage, then that kind of strain, if you like, becomes dominant. So when you have Delta with its mutations that made it more transmissible, it out, you know, transmitted every other variant that we were dealing with at the time, which was Alpha, and became dominant. So Delta is much more transmissible because of those mutations. And I suppose that's why we're worried about this variant, this new variant in South Africa, because we think that it has mutations that is also going to make it more transmissible.
And how is it spreading so fast among children, Christine? Is it purely because they're not vaccinated?
So it's a combination of factors. The dominant factor is because they are unvaccinated. We've seen evidence in the country that as we've vaccinated down through age cohorts, the case numbers in those cohorts usually decline in line with vaccination. So, and we're seeing that already in our booster program. So vaccination is our primary defense, I suppose, against COVID-19. So these are a group of unvaccinated. They are also in indoor settings for a large portion of the day in schools, despite the school's best efforts to be able to create safe spaces and ventilate. And then obviously they haven't been wearing masks. So all of the other tools, I suppose, we have in place to manage case numbers in other age cohorts, we don't have them in this age group. I think it's really a combination of those that are driving the case numbers at the moment in this age group.
And Christine, is COVID spread among kids in the same way we know it's spread among adults? I mean, is it that, you know, coughing, the sneezing, the sniffles, all the rest?
Yeah, and I think, you know, there was a lot of, I suppose, mixed messages around children and their role that they played, I suppose, in transmitting COVID from very early on. And initially they were labelled as vectors and everybody was very worried about children, you know, interacting with adults. Then I suppose we kind of understood a little bit more about the fact that actually the way in which the virus gets into the cell through this little ACE receptor on the surface, that actually sometimes children express so much less of that, and therefore the virus doesn't have the same entry route into children. So we thought maybe then that maybe they weren't able to have a high viral load and weren't able to transmit. And now if we look at more recent research, we see very clearly that children can have as high a viral load as an adult, and they can transmit the infection to other children and other adults. So they're very, you know, similar to the rest of the population. And I suppose the biggest difference is that on the whole, the severity of infection in children is much less than we would see in older adults. So there's been a lot of, I suppose, not changing of mind, but I suppose a lot of additional information that's kind of given us a better view of the risk for children and also how they play a role, I suppose, in transmission. And they can carry a viral load and they can transmit the virus.
And we know that vaccines will be rolled out here now for children aged between 5 and 11 years. This should definitely help matters, Christine. But, you know, are we likely to see the majority of parents vaccinate their children?
I mean, I think vaccination in this age group is going to have a significant impact. First of all, on the children that we're vaccinating, because, as I said, on the whole, you know, the severity of this illness is usually very mild in children. We do have lots of complications in children to do with COVID-19, both when they are having an infection. And, you know, even just to put that in context, over the last 2 weeks, 50 children under the age of 17 or 18 have been admitted to hospital. So it's you know, it can be very severe in some children. So I think that, you know, the vaccine is going to certainly address that. The other thing the vaccine is going to address is, I suppose, overall our case numbers, because if we have more people vaccinated, then the risk of transmission is lower, the number of people picking up the infection is lower, and that will, I suppose, translate into an impact on the overall case numbers in our population. So I think vaccination is going to have a significant impact both on the children in terms of their case numbers, their potential risks of infection, and also the general population. And I suppose when we talk about vaccination in children, we need to consider the other factors, which is that when children have COVID infection, we know now that there's also a risk of them having longer lasting effects afterwards. And that's also something that the parents should consider. So I think that the data so far is telling us that possibly 50% plus of parents would at this time get their children vaccinated, which I think is a very positive indication. If you look at the age group that's next, which is the 12 to 15 year olds, they're about 67% double jabbed at the moment, which has been a very high take up in that age group, considering those vaccines have only been allowed to be given to those children in the last few months. So I think that over time, more parents with more information and good education are able to make more informed decisions. And I think the same will be true in this cohort, that there's certain parents who are absolutely happy at the moment with the information they have to be able to have their child vaccinated. But hopefully over time, that number will increase as parents get to ask questions and get to have any concerns they have around the vaccine addressed. One of the key considerations for parents of this age group has been the amount of talk that we've had around myocarditis as a rare side effect of the COVID-19 vaccine in the older children, the teenagers and into early adults. We saw incidences of myocarditis when we rolled out the vaccine at scale. And one of the, I think, the most reassuring things at the moment is that the US have already rolled out this vaccine at scale. They've given about 3 million doses and they have not recorded a single incidence of myocarditis in children of this age. We think it's because they get a lower dose, but I think that it has been one of the concerns of parents of teenage children when the decision they were making about getting the vaccine for those children. So I'd like to just maybe really point to that as a very positive indicator of safety for this age group, so that parents don't need to worry that that's going to be a significant impact on this age.
On mask wearing, Christine, should we have been encouraging masks among school children all along?
So I think if you look out in everyday life, you see a lot of children in that age bracket, I suppose, of 8, 9, 10 and upwards, and wearing masks in shopping centres or other indoor settings. So I think that there are parents who are quite happy for their children to wear masks, and they have been. I think there's been no guidance around or no advice around the benefits of mask wearing in school, and therefore parents haven't engaged in mask wearing. I wouldn't like to see mask wearing mandated in school, because I do think that it's going to present difficulties for some children in terms of mask wearing, particularly if they haven't been mask wearing up to now. But I do think that feedback from parents at the moment is that some of them would be quite happy for their children to wear masks in school. Masks, they do lower transmission. They can prevent it in certain situations, but certainly transmission of COVID-19 is lower when people are wearing masks. So it will have an impact. I don't know if it's going to have as significant an impact as we need at the moment with the case numbers. There's such a high level at the moment in this age group that I don't know if mask wearing is going to be the only thing that's going to bring that number down. But I do think if there's some guidance and education around the benefits of mask wearing, and if parents are encouraged to talk to their children about it, and that children are encouraged to wear them if they feel comfortable wearing them, I think that that would be a positive thing.
Rob White, you're the principal of Kilmeade National School in Athy, County Kildare. Can you give me an idea of what you're seeing on a day-to-day basis now in the time of COVID?
Well, what we're seeing right now, I suppose, is over the last 3 weeks in our school especially, an uptick in COVID cases and incidences, and a major uptick in not being able to get substitute teachers to cover classes. That's the biggest issues that we're facing right now.
And you yourself are out of the school at the moment, aren't you?
So we have 7 class teachers, 1 ASD class, and 3 SEN teachers. And I'm one of 5 teachers that are isolating today, waiting for PCR test results.
What about the ever-changing goalposts on rules and restrictions, Rob? Are you feeling quite frazzled by it all?
Well, it's the communication issue is huge. The communication that we're getting from the department is just, it has been for a long time, very, very poor. We received last night, yesterday evening, which I have to commend the department on, because at least we got enough notice on the new antigen and contact tracing and antigen testing that's going to be going in. But even within that, there were certain questions that haven't been answered. For example, in juniors, seniors, first and second, there are no what we call pods. There are no pods. We're told that pods aren't necessary because juniors, seniors, first and second can't segregate themselves in class, and they learn through a play more than anything else. So socialization is a massive part of it. So we don't have pods, but we haven't been told what to do as regards if we have a case of COVID in junior, seniors, first and second. Do we let all the parents in the class know? Do we let the parents, the children at that table know? Again, it's the lack of clear communication that is really frustrating everybody.
Teachers aren't deemed to be close contacts of kids with COVID, are they, Rob? I mean, that doesn't seem to make very much sense.
It doesn't make, look, a whole lot of this doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, the number one, I'll go back to the teachers thing in a second, but the number one thing that everybody is saying is if you're in an indoor setting, that ventilation is the key to avoiding it from spreading. And yet the extent of what any school has been given as regards ventilation is open your windows. So that is just like that is, and you've got 30 kids plus an adult plus maybe an SNA or two in the room as well. That, and they keep telling us that these are the mitigation factors. We have the best mitigation factors in Europe in place, inside the classrooms and all the rest of it. Well, I mean, I can't imagine are the other schools not opening windows in other countries, because that's the only thing that we're doing. That's the only thing that we're able to do. We have these CO2 monitors, but all they do, firstly, they're shared among schools. We don't have enough for one in every class. And then they're just telling us whether we have to open the windows wider or not. So, I mean, the teachers are extremely frustrated by the fact that this is what we're being told now. And this is, we're being told everything is being safe. And we know ourselves. It just doesn't make any sense.
And on top of that, you may have and the new idea of the introduction of masks for children from third class upwards. How do teachers feel about yet another rule that they will be expected to monitor?
Well, another frustrating factor would be the fact that this is all kite flying, that we get secondhand information. Parents, depending on whether parents are listening to the news or not, they get this information before me, before any principal. If it comes out at 1 o'clock in the daytime and I'm at work, I don't hear about it. Parents hear about it before I do. They contact me saying, do we have to do X, Y, or Z? And I haven't heard anything about it at all. So as regards mask wearing and things like that, it doesn't matter what teachers feel, because it's going to come in no matter what. So all we're looking for as teachers and principals is for people to say, this is what you have to do. Is it a recommendation? Is it mandatory? These are the questions that we have. And if it is a recommendation, well, look, it'll be the same as what everything is going on right now, because I think every school says that if your child wants to wear a mask, of course they can wear a mask, but we're not going to be responsible for how they wear a mask, because we can't be responsible for them wearing it under their nose, etc., and things like that. So I'd imagine that is all that we're going to be told. It's going to be recommended, and that'll be it.
Sheena McGinley, Irish Independent columnist. You have 2 young daughters, isn't that right?
I do indeed. And over a week ago, our eldest one, she's in third class, she was diagnosed with COVID. We wouldn't have gotten her tested, only that the principal in our school was dutiful enough to let us know that there were some confirmed cases in her class, because she had absolutely no symptoms. So we went out of our way to get some antigen tests. And the third day that we did them, she came up positive. So yeah, things have been, for want of a better term, like a roller coaster. So.
And Sheena, if a child has COVID in a school setting, I mean, is it standard for teachers to reach out and let parents, other parents, know?
No, it's not. It's not standard. Well, it hasn't. Well, it's kind of been but on a covert basis, shall we say, since the 27th of September, which is when contact tracing effectively stopped in a primary school setting. Now, thankfully, things are changing in that regard. The Department of Education have said that they're going to bring back in antigen testing for confirmed cases in a school pod.
And that happens today, actually. Yes. That's when they're being rolled out, yeah.
But even surrounding that, personally, I find the messaging a little bit muddy because what was sent by the Department of Education last week, they're saying it's not necessary for parents, I'm quoting here, it's not necessary for parents to share information with the school about whether they've requested antigen tests or undertaken negative tests. Children who are well should continue to come to school whether they participate in antigen testing or not. And the decision to do antigen testing with your child is completely up to parents and guardians and will have no impact on your child's education or experience in school. So what does that say to you?
Well, it seems to be very mixed messages. I mean, you know, even over the last 20 months, Sheena, with, you know, parents being told that schools are a safe setting and now we're being told, well, perhaps they're not as safe as we initially thought.
Seems a little bit after the point because what the surge in schools is happening now. For example, when I brought my 8-year-old for her PCR after her confirmed antigen test, the amount of kids, it was all kids in the queue waiting for the PCR test. And it just seems that it's a little bit after the point because since contact, that there wasn't such an issue in schools when contact tracing was in place. And then there was like that, 2 month period, 2-3 month period where there was nothing and principals were encouraged not for the Department of Education stipulated for data protection reasons, not to communicate if there were cases in a class to parents. It just seems a bit remiss. That's my personal view.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a comfort that vaccinations are coming in. I just wish it, I know it's not, it was down to, you know, the EU and other logistical things for the reason why it's taken so long. But surely contact tracing could have remained in place until vaccinations were available for that demographic.
Have you any doubts about whether or not you'll vaccinate your girls?
No. Personally, no, I don't. Having been double vaccinated myself, and I can understand people's concerns of not knowing the long-term effect of a vaccine on their child, but do you know the long-term effect of COVID on your child? Like, speaking as someone who's like waking up most mornings now with my 8-year-old coughing, like she's our alarm clock now. She coughs continuously every morning, and I don't know how this bout of COVID is going to affect her long term. So yes, I will definitely be availing of the vaccine for their age group once it becomes available, because I wouldn't wish this on anyone really.
And that was Sheena McGinley, Irish Independent columnist. I'm Siobhan Maguire, and today's episode of the Indo Daily was presented and produced by myself, with research by Mary Carroll and sound design by John Smith. Archive clips from independent.ie. You can listen to the Indo Daily wherever you get your podcasts.